I'm going to start, ask, they're laughing at me. God, I ask you to God, please unblock me from you. Unblock me from everything that I think I know so I can see your truth. Help me carry your message today, and thank you for the gift of being able to do this. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Okay, we've, for those on the podcast, I did two meetings on the pages XXVII and XXIX on Doctor's Opinion. Why? It's so important. It's the disease concept of alcoholism. It's the phenomena craving. It describes the mental obsession. It describes the inability to change the way we are except through a psychic change. And it tells us that there is a solution. That strange as it may seem, this person who was doomed can find himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol. And the only effort, and it may be a lot of effort, being that I'm required to follow simple rules and they can't be my rules. And the rules that I think are required to follow are outlined in this book. Now, some people may argue with that. If you have a different plan that works for you, that's fine. But this is a testimony of what they did, and the doctor is giving his medical estimate of this. And he's going to describe why he says that in the next few pages, and we are going to finish the chapter, even though they laughed at me and thought it preposterous that I could cover three pages, but we're going to see. It says, men have cried out to the doctor in sincere and despairing appeal. Doctor, I cannot go on like this. I have everything to live for. I must stop, but I cannot. You must help me. Now, I looked at that, and it could be, I cannot go on like this. Jeff, you got it? Doctor's opinion. I cannot go on like this. I have everything to live for. I must stop, but I cannot. God help me. It's a statement of complete despair. And despair could be complete defeat. To see the truth that I can't do it. I need help. And I can remember when I did that, and I hope I did it this morning when I prayed. Faced with this problem, if a doctor is honest with himself, he must sometimes feel his own inadequacy. And someone at the meeting was complaining Wednesday how doctors and nurses are not sympathetic to us when we come into the ER and we're drunk again, and we then sign out after 2 hours, and then we're back 8 hours later. And why don't they give us more compassion and understanding? Well, it's a defense mechanism. It's a defense mechanism because of the inadequacy and the inability of them to change us. And so it's not that people don't like us. It's that they have no answer for us. And although he gives all that is in him, it is often not enough. And it was just like me. I could give everything I could to the cancer patient, but if I didn't have the right treatment, there was no way. It wasn't within my power. And it's not within the doctor's power. And he says, one feels that something more than human power is needed to produce the entire essential psychic change. And this is a great document. This was written in 1939. He could see the truth. It's not that we're weak-willed, which we are not. We're very strong-willed. It's that we don't have the power, and we have to have a psychic change, a change in my personality and the way I view things. It's essential that I see my brokenness, my inability to fix myself. And from there, I can turn to someone who might have the power, God. And then I want to seek him. And I want to stop running the world. Why? Because it doesn't work. And so I need a complete change in my thinking and my personality. And it's described that the spiritual awakening or spiritual experience is a personality change sufficient to recover from alcoholism. And it has to be sufficient. You have to have a sufficient change. And then here's the problem. You have to continue to keep it changed. And that's what steps 10 and 11 are all about. The aggregate of recoveries resulting from the psychiatric field is considerable. That might be an overestimate. We physicians must admit we have made little impression upon the problem as a whole. Many types do not respond to the ordinary psychological approach. So if you haven't responded to the ordinary psychological approach, which is human power, you might want to give yourself, completely abandon yourself to this. I do not hold with those who believe that alcoholism is entirely a problem of mental control. So he's talking about two controls, mental and physical. So there are people, I've had men who were worked for a period of months on some problem or business deal which was settled on a certain date. So somebody said, let's have a drink to celebrate. And they took one drink and then they're blacked out. How'd that happen? And see, so that he's talking about mental control and physical control. We have no control over the amount we drink. And then the phenomenon of craving took over and at once became paramount to all other interests. So the phenomenon of craving will block out anything we want to do. So if you're drinking all day and you wake up and then you still have alcohol, you're going to crave more and you could go on a binge. Anybody ever heard of a binge? Anybody had a binge? They're not fun. These men were not drinking to escape. See, that's, we drink to escape and we drink for the effect, but they were drinking to overcome a craving beyond their mental control. So once you have it in your body, you can't control how much you drink. And a lot of people just stop because it's just, they've run out. They can't drink anymore. There are many situations which arise out of the phenomenon of craving which cause men to make the supreme sacrifice then continue to fight. They just can't, they can't stop, and they can't see that the phenomenon of craving is never going to go away. And they have the obsession, the drink, and they say, well, I'll control it this time. And then they keep having this cycle. Then he talks about the classification of alcoholics seems most difficult. It is, but I don't know that we talk about it much anymore. There are, of course, the psychopaths. Any psychopaths in here who are emotionally unstable? Now, I think he's using psychopath different than like Hannibal Lecter and Silence of the Lambs and things like that. But there are people who don't seem to make sense. They can't, they're emotionally unstable. They are always in conflict with someone or something. Anybody know anybody like that? Anybody ever been that way? We are familiar with this type. They're always going on the wagons for keep. Anybody say that they're not going to drink again? They are over remorseful and make many resolutions, so they feel really bad. And they make many resolutions, but not a decision. Now, what does he mean by that? A firm decision to follow through to God. They make many resolutions, but they can't keep them because, remember, the decision in step 3, unless followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things blocking you from God, is gonna do nothing. It's just like a waste of time to wake up every day and say, I'm gonna give my life to you, God, and not having worked the steps and having no spiritual kit of tools for you each day. It's just not going to work. And then the day goes crappy and you say, well, I prayed in the morning. I heard that before. I pray every morning. I said, great. And then you get in the car and you're running the world. You've heard of that, Julie, haven't you? Yeah. Yeah. And you look at it, but they can't get it. And then they get mad at me. There's the type of man, I think I've pissed off a lot of people in AA, but that's okay. You know, if you tell people what they don't want to hear, that's okay. But you have to tell them the truth and not be mean about it. There was a guy who says he told everybody who he knew he met that they're going to die at a meeting. And somebody said, well, that's really cruel. He says they have a fatal disease. And so I don't want to tell him that, you know, come for a while and see if this is good for you. And, you know, you may want to do this, but if you're a real alcoholic, you're dying. And so I don't know how to do it. I don't know. I don't tell people they're going to die anymore too much. But Brian is usually on, and he said it really made a difference because he was just going on and on and on. One day we're sitting in the closet. I said, well, you know, you're going to die of this. And that really seemed to help him. And I don't remember saying it, but he remembers it. I probably did. And then there's Dave H., and he was in the car, and I told him he was going to die, and his wife was there. She's a witness. And he said that really made a difference because he was just a mess. And he was calling me crying, you know, with the self-pity song. You know, I don't know how it goes, poor me, and nobody understands me, and I'm not going to finish the chapter, I can tell. And then I said, stop, you're dying of this. And that seemed to make a difference. I don't know. My intentions are always good. We do the best we can. There's a man, type of man who's unwilling to admit that he cannot take a drink. He plans various ways of drinking. He changes his brand or his environment. I don't think we get too many of those in AA, but they do that for a long time before they come to AA. There's a type who always believes that after being entirely free from alcohol for a period of time, he can take a drink without danger, and I've seen that a lot. And those are people who really don't want to quit. They come to AA and they're sober for 3 months, and they say to themselves, you know, I've been sober for 3 months, I've done a great job, look at me, and I can do it any time. So I'll drink today, and then I can sober up. And that kind of thinking is completely deranged because it doesn't work. Anybody tried that? We've all tried that. It doesn't work. You're just fooling yourselves. Then there's the manic depressive type, who perhaps least understood by his friends, about whom all the chapter can be written. And I think there are people who have manic depressive disease, and they treat that with alcohol. And so you have to treat that disease. And that medicine will help them, medicines for that. Then there are types, now I don't believe this, that are entirely normal in every respect except the effect the alcohol has upon them. They are often able, intelligent, friendly people. Now I think he sees that, but if he saw their mind and had their thinking played on a video screen while he's talking to them, he would say, wow, because you can't see inside people's minds. They can look pretty good, right? And make sense, but they're full of anger and fear and shame and guilt, and their thinking is abnormal. And they may be people like that, I don't know. I might seem able, intelligent, and friendly to people, but you don't know the nonsense that's going on in my head sometimes. You know, wow, who would believe it? But now when I get the nonsense, I just let it go through. It's like a train going through the station. I said, that's just ridiculous. All these and many others have one symptom in common. Now here's the deal. You cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we've suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy, which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. Now the power doctor's opinion is that they continue to hammer home the idea that you cannot take a drink. You're screwed if you drink again. If you're a real alcoholic, you cannot take a drink again. Now, how do you know you're a real alcoholic? Jeff hasn't heard this. Real alcoholics hide alcohol, right? They hide a legal substance. And normal people don't hide legal substances. I think that's pretty true. Most alcoholics have hidden it. In fact, you find hidden stuff when you come back from treatment. Wow, look at that. I forgot that one. I don't know, I'm getting off here. But the allergy, we have to understand that. So he says, no treatment will remove that. And self-knowledge won't help you. Knowing that you can't control how much you drink will not work at all. So the treatment centers say, okay, you can't drink, so now let's work on triggers. Let's figure out what your triggers are. I think that's really very good. Make a whole list. And then when the trigger comes, you're going to say, okay, that's a trigger, right? Now, if you're an alcoholic and you are awake, that's the only trigger you need to drink again. Because your mind is the disease and your mind cannot see the truth. So you might drink right through the trigger. And it is true, you do have triggers, but knowing that won't keep you from drinking. I believe that. I think that made sense, I'm not sure. So it says, the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. Remember, Nancy Reagan, you're all too young. Don't drink. Just don't say no.
Just say no.
And everybody loved it. And they're singing and holding hands and singing Kumbaya. Just say no at Betty Ford and all. Well, that won't do you any good because you can't say no right before the first drink. You say yes. And that's insane. Has anybody done that? See, that's the problem. People don't understand this. This immediately precipitates into a seething cauldron of, like, a cauldron's like, what, a big pot full of hot stuff? A big chili. Much has been written pro and con, but among physicians, the general opinion seems to be that most chronic alcoholics are doomed. Doomed. Doomed is not good. If I had a cancer patient, I'd say, you are doomed. They would not leave the office happy. I never would say that. That's cruel. See, I wouldn't tell cancer patients you're going to die because that won't help them. But if I told an alcoholic that you're going to die unless you give up completely and you give yourself to the simple program, you see, that's the solution. Now, I could say you're doomed of your Hodgkin's disease and you can't breathe, but we have a treatment, these medicines I'm going to give you in 1 hour because you're so sick. They wouldn't say, well, let me go home and think about it. You see, they would take it. And so you don't want to give a poor prognosis without offering hope. And that's what the book does. The book, the doctor's opinion is to tell you, you're deep doo-doo. But then remember, it's followed by Bill's story, which is a message of hope. From someone who had what the doctor had, and then they have theirs a solution. So the big book is not to depress you, it's to get you to understand your situation, that you are doomed, you have a hopeless condition of mind and body, but it's seemingly. So here it is. And people don't want to even hear it. They don't even want to come to a big book study like this. Why? Why are alcoholics doomed? Because they cannot live without the first drink sober. Alcoholics cannot live sober. The disease of alcoholism occurs before you drink. Alcohol is not the problem. It's a solution to living without God, and you don't like the way you feel, and you drink. Or you could use heroin, or you could be a sex addict, or a food addict, or a shopping addict. Whatever it is that relieves your emotional disorder from being separated from God. So what is the solution? So here he's going to give you some experiences, and these are good, and I think I probably will finish this today, and Mark will be happy. About 1 year prior to this experience, a man was brought in to be treated for chronic alcoholism. He had recovered from a gastric hemorrhage. Now, that's bad. You get a gastric hemorrhage when your liver's bad and you got esophageal varices and your liver's so bad that it's blocking the portal vein, bringing the blood back, so it has to go another way back to the heart. It goes through the stomach lining, and then the stomach lining gets irritated from the alcohol and the acid, and the varices bleed. It's not a fun thing. And seemed to be a case of pathologic mental deterioration. That means alcohol is really affecting his mind and his thinking, and he was really bad. He had lost everything worthwhile in life, was only living, might say, to drink. And I've seen that. He frankly admitted, I don't know that I was that bad when I came in, but I was. That's where I would have ended up. We all have different levels. We don't have high or low bottoms. The bottom's the same. The bottom is when you see the truth and you're done. And you can see the truth when you're bleeding out from gastric esophagus, or you can see the truth when your life is unmanageable and you haven't destroyed your liver, and your wife hasn't left you yet. Wife leaving is not a symptom of bottom, or you lose your business. Those are external things. Hitting bottom is an internal condition when the Lord has graced you with the truth of your situation, and then you're able to see it. You're constitutionally capable of being honest about your situation. He said that there was no hope. Fine, the elimination of alcohol, there was no permanent brain injury. He accepted the plan outlined in this book, and they said, and he did it. He accepted the plan, and he did it. You can have a plan to live sober, but unless you do it, the plan won't do you any good. Now, one thing I suggest all new people is they get rid of their plan, because their plan got them here. And I still kind of come up with plans for the day, and I have to remind myself God's in charge. I have a plan for my wife today. Well, that's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And maybe a plan for me. But you can have a plan, like you can plan you're going to go shopping, but not how people are going to react or whether they're going to do what you want. 1 year later, he called, and he knew the man by name. He partly recognized him, but all resemblance ended. From a trembling, despairing, nervous wreck had emerged a man brimming over with self-reliance and contentment. Now, I have seen that. I have often suggested we should take pictures of your first day in AA and then show them to you a year later, and you can see the difference. I can look around the room. I've known most of these people when they came in, and you can see the difference. And it makes you so, when they celebrate four, five. Julie, how many years did you have?
Five.
We celebrate 5 years. I remember when she came in and crying, and just things were really bad. And look at her now, running a complicated business, and just a wonderful person. But she was that before, but she was dying of the disease, and now look at her. Now, they're not brimming over with self-reliance. They're brimming over that they can rely on themselves now, that they're not going to screw up each day because they have God. So it's not self-reliance, it's really God-reliance makes them, they're able to rely on themselves to make good decisions and good actions because they're connected to God and they're content with themselves. And when you're content with yourself and you're relying on God, alcohol doesn't come in the picture. I talked with him sometime, was not able to bring myself to feel that I'd known him before. To me, it was a stranger, and so he left me. A long time has passed with no return to alcohol. When I need a mental uplift, I think of another case brought in by a physician prominent in New York. And these are cases that he saw. This isn't Bill W. or Dr. Bob. These are other cases. When I need a mental lift, I often think of another case brought in by a physician prominent in New York. The patient made his own diagnosis and, deciding his situation hopeless, had hidden himself in a deserted barn, determined to die. He was rescued by a searching party and in desperate condition brought to me. Following his physical rehabilitation, he had talked with me in which he frankly stated that he thought the treatment a waste of time. Unless I could assure him, which no one had ever had, that in the future he would have the willpower to resist the impulse to drink. So he was very skeptical. Now remember, he didn't have AA meetings to go to. He didn't have somebody like Mark to meet with 20-some years, 24 years, and Mark can tell him how he was, what happened to him and what it was like and what it's like. Now, he didn't have that. So he didn't know that he would have the God power to resist the impulse to drink. See, we replace willpower with God power. Knowledge of his will for me and the power to carry that out. Vision of his, carry a vision of God's activities in all my affairs, right? His alcoholic problem was so complex, his depression so great, that we felt his only hope, they didn't give him depression medicines. Now, people can have depression and need medicines. treatment centers now give everybody drugs when they come in. I don't know if that's a good or bad idea, but the drugs have a lot of side effects. And I don't know that alcoholics should be depressed. They should be depressed. But I don't know that it's the clinical depression that the drugs were designed to treat. And I'm probably upsetting somebody on the... I'm not saying you shouldn't take depression medicines or it's good or bad, but they you know, it's... What are you treating? And alcoholic depression is from not getting your way, from life not going the way you want, and things don't go right. And everybody doesn't... Nobody understands me. And my motives were so good. And look what happened. She left me, and the kids are gone, and they fired me at work because... I didn't show up 3 days a week, but why should they, didn't they know I meant not to drink and all that? You hear it all the time. His alcoholic problem was so complex, his depression so great, that we thought his only hope would be through what we then called moral psychology, and we doubted if even that would have any effect. I don't know what moral psychology is, but it's changing the truth of his thinking. And I don't know... That's essentially what we try to do now by seeing how our thinking's wrong, and we try to change the way we see it. Now, here's the deal. However, he did become sold. Remember the Envision for You, AA number 3? He became sold, and he committed himself. What was the word, Stu? He gave himself completely willing to do anything. Sold on the ideas contained in this book. He has not had a drink for a great many years. I see him now and then, and he is as fine a specimen of manhood as one could ever wish. You see, you can't argue with these results, right? You can't argue when I see Stu and
capitulated
Mark.
Entirely.
Capitulated entirely.
Surrendered.
Capitulated entirely. They don't like to put surrender because alcoholics don't like the word. Surrender isn't in the big book. Because alcoholic surrendering is like, ooh, but capitulated entirely. And he's the finest specimen of manhood as one could ever meet. Now, here's the key line. I earnestly advise every alcoholic to read this book through. And though perhaps he may scoff means, oh, this is nonsense. He may remain to pray. Great way of putting it. He will scoff, he's in self-centered, and then he will remain and be turning to God. So he has given his testimony to the truth contained in the book. And what could be better than that? And he signed it here. Now you remember in the first edition he didn't sign it because the ideas that are presented in this chapter were not accepted. They just thought we were scumbags, let's put it honest, and that we were weak-willed, and there was no hope for us. And why? Because they saw us. We kept doing the same things over and over again with the same result. We hurt people. We hurt the people we loved. We hurt ourselves. We weren't reliable. And that was the disease concept of alcoholism until Dr. Silkworth explained that there's something wrong with our bodies and something wrong with our thinking. And that we're separated from God. That was the key. And we're going to see that in There Is a Solution from Dr. Young, how he understood that we needed a total rearrangement of our ideas and attitudes on life, and it had to come from God. So, we did finish. And so we'll start Bill's story on Wednesday, which is fantastic stuff. And so I hope this was helpful. And don't anybody...
I hope you recorded this.
I did, but don't anybody who's listening think that I say you shouldn't get depression medicines. But for people to go to treatment, they just hand them out routinely the first day. There are a lot of side effects to them, and I think they should be evaluated each individually. And Dick was a psych nurse, and he's nodding his head. But some people do suffer from serious manic depressive disorders, and they need medicines. If not, they can't quit drinking because their mind needs these medicines to straighten it out, and or else they're in such conflict. Post-traumatic stress syndrome is another one where they have serious mental issues and they cannot certain personality disorders need medicine. So I want to clarify that. All right, we're done. Thank you.